This podcast was recorded on Kaurna land. We acknowledge the Kaurna people as the original custodians of the land and pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Your life experience is unparalleled to most of us, and like, yet walking past you on the street, you would have no idea what you've been through.
You'll want to make a note.
Should you be taking notes or something?
You got a pencil? Write this down, quick.
Why aren't you taking notes?
Write this down.
Aren't you going to write this down?
Did you need me to take notes?
Please take note.
And welcome back to season two of Take Note. If this is your first time listening, we are the podcast where we give you the best notes on everything you need to know throughout your whole university journey. And once again, my name's Liv and I'm joined here with Megan.
Hi everyone. It is really early in the morning right now. Well, I personally am not a morning person, so this is considered early for me.
Yeah,
it's 8:30. Like, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, just past 8:30. Just a couple of days ago, we recorded the interview segment of this episode, and then today we're recording the intro and outro, but my God, I'm feeling awake and Adam. I changed the sheets on my bed this morning. I faked tan last night. It's a Friday right now, so just waiting for the weekend, counting down the minutes.
Same. What are your plans for the weekend?
This weekend, my 21st season is coming to an end. So I turned 21 like ages ago, like not that long ago, like 10 months ago.
Yeah.
And the last girl in my friendship group, it's her 21st this weekend. So, and then no more 21st. How crazy.
In Australia, 21st is celebrated really big, right?
Yes. 21st season. So my birthday was one of the first ones for like the year of school that I graduated in, which I think you were the same, 2021.
Yeah.
So like now that last year we were 3 years out of school. So my birthday's in May. So I was like one of the first 21st. Mm-hmm. But then seriously, like from my birthday until like December, I had a 21st every single weekend, sometimes multiple.
Like and people then, from high school and stuff.
Yeah, but then like people you meet at uni, and then like your friends get boyfriends and like you get invited sometimes, or like it's just like crazy. And 21st season brings like people out of the woodwork, like people you haven't spoken to in like a couple of years, or you're like not as close anymore. Like everyone invites everyone to their 21st in Australia.
My best friend, she went to high school here, and I swear every single weekend she was dressed up and like celebrating the 21st.
Yeah, that's literally crazy. What it's like. And then like December, January rolled around and like there was a little break because like people, I don't know, like Christmas and stuff. Right. And now like I've had a couple this year so far, and this is my last one this weekend.
Wow. What are you getting her?
We went in with a big group of people and she really wants a digital camera. So we got her the Canon G7X.
Stop.
I know. The waiting list for it is crazy. We had to order it like in January and it's like mid-March right now.
Wow.
And it was like $1,000.
Yeah, I heard it's like really, really expensive.
So anyway, we got her that. Thank God this episode's going out after her birthday, because imagine she like listened to it and was like, oh, that's what they're getting me. What? So yeah, so fun. What about you? What's your plans this weekend?
Honestly, I just want to like sleep throughout the whole weekend, but I'm catching a few friends that I have not caught up with because now that uni's starting, everyone's flying back in.
Oh yes.
But yeah, so I'll be catching up with them. Otherwise, just sleeping through the weekend.
Yeah, fair enough. That's what I did last weekend over the long weekend, and I definitely needed it.
Oh, so Monday, tired. It was like 40 degrees, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I was inside and I could barely breathe.
Anyway, let's jump straight to it. So the question of the fortnight this week, Megan, is what's the first thing that happened at uni that made you feel like you belong?
First thing that I can think about right now is my very first friend group in uni. I met my friend Tim in first year, and we met online because we were both kind of stuck in Malaysia. And yeah, we were already enrolled and we already had classes. And then it was the time when Adelaide had like one case of COVID. Shut and the borders everything, and everything. Yeah. It was, oh my gosh.
Adelaide was so dramatic for that.
It was frustrating because I had everything settled. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm finally going to Adelaide. One case of COVID closed.
No, literally.
Yeah. So we met online. And then when I got here, I was like, oh, I'm finally here. And he's already settled in like I think 2 weeks in Adelaide, so he helped me move in, he helped me like get it settled and everything, and then he brought me to my first party.
Oh my god.
He was
your first party?
It was like a rooftop party, and then we had drinks and then we went out to town. But I say to town, but like literally I live in a city. But that's what you guys say. When
yeah.
You go to, yeah. Okay.
So
cool.
It's like, I guess because like all of our clubs are like on one street, like on
right.
High Street. It's like, it's not like, oh, we're going to go to this club or like we're going clubbing. It's like, we just go to town because I don't know.
No, that makes sense though.
Like everyone, like if you say, oh, are you going to town after? Like everyone knows what you mean.
Yeah. Because if I say it, it's just like, I'm already kind of living in. Like,
yeah, you're like, I'm in town. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, no, but it was my first friend group, and then I met through friends of friends, and then I think we all bonded because we were all international students, but I think that's how it works for most of us. But it was a really weird time in my life, my first year, let's just say that. But it was, I was the youngest in that friend group, so it was a little bit like,
oh
I
my
did,
god, you were the youngest.
Yeah, like everyone was at least 2 years older than me. That's a bit dramatic, like the baby of the group. But yeah, I felt like there was a bit of like a gap there.
Mm.
And because I was here 4 weeks late, like say uni started, I was in here in like week four. I was really behind, and like I felt like they kind of already clicked. Mm. So I've always felt a little bit left out. We did drift apart at the end, but towards that end of that first year, I found like a different friend group that I really like got along with. My social battery just never drained.
It's good that like you feel like you belong, like, and everyone kind of in those first couple of weeks at uni will like make friends with people that like you're not sure if you're going to be friends, and it's like a good story that like they made you feel like you belong and they gave you the confidence to find other friends because like you felt, I guess, settled.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, I mean, I guess when you first come to Australia, you literally never know what to expect.
Mm.
So it was very like nerve-wracking coming here and like, do I even say hi?
Yeah.
You never know. Like, what if I say hi and this person's like, ew, don't talk to me. I don't want to get rejected. I'm scared. But the reason we were even friends in the first place is like, oh, we all came from like different parts of the country. Sorry. And like, we all left home to study here. But the longer we were friends for, we realized like, oh, we actually have very different lifestyles. And then that's kind of how we drifted apart.
No, I think that's really good. My story is like the complete opposite of that. So funny. So as all of you know, my name's Olivia or Liv. And I'm obviously a domestic student and Megan's an international student. So like Megan was able to bond because everyone had moved to Adelaide. Whereas I was like, oh my God, all my friends have gone into healthcare at uni from high school. Like I need to make friends that are in my degree. So I went with a couple of my friends to one of the O week, like O parties.
Yeah.
And this one was in Fat Controller. I don't know if anyone remembers when that was like the place to be.
Right.
So I was like, perfect. Like that one will be the party to be at.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go to this party and it was supposed to be like the University of Adelaide party. And I was like, perfect, let's go. Back in the day, I like love to have a couple drinks, so I was like
little
on one
giggle.
Yeah. I was like ready to make friends, so I'm like in the toilets and I'm like, whatever, this is like such a TMI story, but whatever. So I'm like in the bathroom with these three girls and we're all going to the toilet. I've gone and I'm like standing by the door and I hear someone out like in the foyer of the toilet like washing her hands introduce herself to someone and she goes, yeah, so I'm Olivia. And I literally flung the door open to the cubicle that I was in and I was like, oh, did you just say your name is Olivia? My name is Olivia.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, wow, this is like crazy. So I took a selfie with this girl, Olivia, and I put up my private story and I was like, I met an Olivia. I had no idea who she was, what she was studying, like literally nothing about her.
Right.
I just was like, oh my God, we have the same name. This is so fun.
Yeah.
And then like, as you do in the girls' bathroom, everyone knows like everyone in the girls' bathroom is like the nicest person.
Everyone's a hype girl in the bathroom.
Yes.
It's so cute though.
I love it. So anyway, I introduced myself to this girl and we were like chatting. I was like, so what are you studying? She was like, I'm doing a Bachelor of Commerce. I'm doing a Bachelor of Commerce. I was like, oh, no way. Like, I'm doing the same degree. Like, this is insane. And then I was like, oh, like, when are your classes? Like, let's see if we have any classes together. You would not believe it. Next day at 3 p.m., we have a class together.
Oh my God, I love that.
And I remember I was like, oh, like, we'll meet up before class, like, maybe at 2 o'clock. Like, we got on so well the night before. I, like, had my friends hang out with her friends. We were, like, all hanging out together. I was like, perfect. I was like, oh, like, we'll meet up with each other at 2 so we can, like, see each other again and, like, keep talking and then we'll go to class from 3 till 4. And I remember I was in the hub at 1:30 and I could like see her like with this whole huge group of friends and I was there studying alone and she was like had this whole group of friends around her. She was studying in the hub and I was like, oh my God, this is so awkward because like I've seen her. So I went up to her at 1:30 and I was like, if we don't get along, I'm with her for like 2.5 hours because like we've got class at 3, which is an hour, and then I've going to be with her for like this whole hour and a half right now. And she was like, oh my God, guys, like who remembers Liv? And we were like talking so much. Aww. And we just like literally had everything in common. Like we both had like one sister. We have dogs that look like twins.
Oh.
I think like we used to have the same ice cream flavor and like everything in our lives was just like the exact same. It was like I'd found a duplicate of myself.
Yeah. She's brunette.
Yeah, she's
got,
brunette.
Like, a brunette Olivia and a blonde Olivia.
Yeah. And like we did our whole degree together. Like from like second year onwards, we had like every single class together and we used to have the same job together. We got a job with each other. How I got this job was by doing an internship with the university and I did it with Liv as well.
Okay.
And then like everyone at the internship would like call us the Olivias, like, oh, what are the Olivias doing?
Oh,
and it was like brunette Liv, blonde Liv, so cute. And now we're graduating together in May.
Oh, that's so
like
cute.
Such a cute, wholesome story.
Yeah. Wait, so if you both work together and someone goes, oh, Liv or Olivia.
Oh yeah, we both just turn around. It's like our fourth year of being friends.
Right.
Oh my God, I just realized I missed it. Every year I buy her a present for the day that we met each other.
Oh my God.
Because it was the 2nd of March.
So you've been friends since first year?
First year.
Wow.
First week of first year, we became friends and we're still friends. How crazy.
Oh my gosh. That's so cute.
Yeah, so cute. So I feel like that's kind of like a really good success story, but
yeah.
I don't want anyone to listen to that and be like, oh my God, like it's already past first week and I haven't had a story like that, because like your story was like,
week 5 in, literally.
Yeah.
I met them. Well, I met Tim in way before that. I think a semester in. I think we did semester online. Obviously, when I saw that, like, there were people still going out when I was in that phase where I was drifting apart from my friends, it did feel a bit, I felt really pressured and I felt like, oh, this isn't the uni life I was expecting. But no, like, you keep going out to social events. There'll definitely be people that you, like, just click with and you won't realize it until, like, 2 months in. I remember I was with, I met Claire and Sherry and Edwin like end of my first year, like we got close end of first year, and I remember we were hanging out and it was like I think 1-2 a.m. and I was like, guys, I'm not tired, and like, oh, we're not tired, and I'm like, wait, because we all had like similar, well, not all of us, but most of us had similar stories of like having a friend group where you just felt really pressured to kind of like chime in or like, you know, have something in common.
You were like, I need to make friends, like what do I need to do, like,
and you just, I honestly thought like this was my first friend group. I thought they would be like my day ones. But
yeah, which I think is what a lot of people think going into uni.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Friendship breakup happens. And you know, like no bad blood between me and any of my friends from first year. Like I still wish them well and I see them doing well. I'm like, good on you, you know?
Yeah.
From one international student to another, it's tough and we get it. But like, it happens. And then you will find your people. But that's kind of part of growing up.
And I think the whole point of this episode that we really want to like tell everyone is that everyone does belong at university.
Yeah.
Like just because your first friends might not work out or like you get pushed into a club and like you're not really feeling like you're fitting, that doesn't mean that you don't belong at university. It just means that like you haven't found your people yet.
Exactly.
And I think the big point that we want to make is like you come to university and like your first friendship was like through like all you all being international students. So it's like ISS is like really good at putting people together and being like, you should all be friends. Like here's people that are similar to you, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to feel like you fit in straight away.
Yeah.
Or like the first people you meet in your first class, they might not be your best friends. Like I did get very lucky with mine. And it's like, you are going to drift from people and things like that. And it's like everyone belongs at university, like no matter what your background is.
Yeah. And like you said, most of your friends in high school, they went into healthcare.
Yeah.
That must have been really frustrating. Like, oh, do I should I study healthcare now? No, but
I think I always knew that I was never going to be a healthcare worker.
Neither. But shout out to them, though. That's
They're doing
else.
God's work.
Yeah, literally.
One of my best friends from school, actually, it's her first day working as a nurse today. Like, she's done her 3-year degree and she was on orientation all week. And today's her first day, like, on the ward as a nurse.
Oh my gosh, you got goosebumps.
So cute. I know.
Oh, good on her. That is so important. I know a lot of people that are just getting into the IPM, International Peer Mentor. So they're like mentors in ISS. And my friend Luna, it's her 2nd year here in Adelaide. And she just joined it and she's made so many new friends. And they're so cute. I feel like when you have like this sort of like the similar backgrounds, say like you and Olivia, you just kind of click.
Yeah, which I did get really lucky.
Yeah,
with.
No, but that's so good. Like there's so many people in uni, just see faces that I've never seen before.
Yeah, which I think is what it's like at university.
Yeah.
And it's also like you don't know what anyone is going through, like when you walk past these people that you don't know. So it's like we really do just seem to be like kind to everyone.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of brings us to who our interviewer was today, who we interviewed. So we interviewed Tiana, who is the Disability Project Support Officer at our university, and she is neurodiverse herself, and she talks to us a lot about her experience going through university, like with a hidden disability and like all of the support that's around and things like that.
We've known Tiana for about a year now.
Yeah.
And like we work closely with her with like coming up with content about disability support and neurodiversity. And honestly, talking to her, you would never know the story
she's
had.
No, you would have no idea. And I feel like that's a good point for us all to be like kind and mindful to everyone, because like the university is a shared space. Like not only are us as students thinking that it's like everyone's here for us. Yes, that's why the institution's here. But like there's so many staff members that work here and our campus is open to the public. So like people that like don't even go here are walking through the university.
I think it's really important that when you see someone that's doing something that's somewhat different, like something that you don't normally see, say like maybe how they study or how they, you know, even just talk. It's something to be mindful of, that like, oh yeah, maybe this is just how they do things and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe like, I know there was a situation I went through during orientation where I was working with a volunteer in the well-being team.
Oh yeah.
And she seemed a bit overwhelmed. And I think from one person that gets very like overstimulated from all the like noise and people and lights, one thing that helped me a lot was to ask questions.
Yeah.
Anything that might spark interest in like their passion or their hobbies. So that's something I did. And I noticed her getting a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and a bit chatty as
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Always be mindful, always be like patient with someone.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Anyway, we are so excited for you to listen to this interview with Tiana. It goes for quite a while, but we promise every second is worth the listen.
Yeah. Oh, and a little heads up, there was a bit of a technical difficulty.
I know, so sad. The room that we record the podcast in didn't quite work during Tiana's recording, but we've made it work.
Thank God for Liv. Check out UA on campus.
Yes.
She's filmed a few videos for the podcast, and thank God we got the audio from that video.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like the quality won't be as good, but we promise the content is 100%.
Yeah, well worth a listen. Yeah. So we'll leave you to it. And today we are lucky enough to be joined by Tiana, who is a Disability Project Support Officer here at the university.
Thank you so much for joining us, Tiana. Would you like to tell us a bit about yourself and what you do in university?
Thank you. So I am the Disability Support Project Officer, and I'm also the coordinator of the Neurodiversity Project. And I wear a couple of different hats in my role. So I am the creator and facilitator of the Neurodivergent Study Skill Workshops that launched last year. So it piloted for the first time in semester two of 2024.
Very exciting.
Yeah, and it was super successful. So we're running them again this year. And then I'm also coordinating the Neurodiversity Peer Mentoring Program, which is also piloting for the first time this semester too. And so that it's the majority of my role.
Very exciting work that you do. And did you also want to tell us a bit about your experience in the neurodiversity space?
So I have, quite a lot of personal experience with hidden disabilities in particular. So I'm neurodivergent myself. I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was 16, and then I received a late diagnosis of ADHD when I was 32. So I'm 33 this year. So I have, always known that I was neurodivergent. I think my dyslexia was something that I really struggled with in high school and coming into university. I still did really well at uni. I finished top of my class. I was valedictorian.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I was valedictorian for my year and I did really well, but that didn't mean that I didn't struggle immensely or had to deal with a lot of stereotypes regarding dyslexia. And I was also really vocal about my dyslexia with tutors and students. I was always an advocate for myself, and the reason that I believe so strongly in advocacy in this space, in hidden disability space, is because I'm also a cancer survivor. So I survived childhood cancer when I was 12. Yeah, so I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 3. So it was quite intense. And I learned my advocacy skills from my mother, who was also a breast cancer survivor. So we have this running joke in the family that we need to be genetically studied. So any geneticists out there listening can come and contact me, because we have quite a lot of history of breast cancer in the family, but no BRCA gene. So at the moment, we've got no idea sort of where it comes from. And when I was 18, so when I finished high school, I unfortunately got really sick, and I had had an autoimmune condition, which then led into a blood disorder. So I have ITP, or what's called Evans syndrome. I'm not even going to try saying the full scientific name because it's very, very scientific and very Greek and Latin. And that resulted in 6 months of being in hospital, and I had to have a spleen removed. I had to go on a non-PBS approved drug to try and get me better. And that those experiences taught me a lot about what it means to be disabled and to have hidden disabilities in the world. You know, if you look at me just based on what I
was
going
to say, you would have no idea like anything that you've been through.
And it's something that I carry with me quite a lot, and I advocate for students in this space, you know, students who have both disabilities that are obvious and hidden disabilities too. It's about being really kind to one another. You really don't know what someone's medical history is or what they're dealing with or struggling with just based on appearance.
And I think everything that you just explained is exactly why we thought that you'd be the perfect person to have on this episode today. Like, your life experience is unparalleled to most of us, and like, walking past you on the street, you would have no idea what you've been through.
We could do a whole podcast on just my medical history.
Just a 2 hour chat.
Literally, I plan to write a book one day. Once I finish my PhD, we'll go from there.
That would be so good to read, like, a book like that. And I think the experience that you've had in your life and the work that you're doing just shows like how much you care about like helping everyone else out, which is again why having you on the podcast. We're so lucky today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
No, but would you like to share like a bit about what it was like as a university student that is neurodivergent? And sorry, there's a difference between neurodiverse and neurodivergent, is that right?
Yeah, so a lot of people might have heard the term neurodiversity, and neurodiversity is a term that was coined in the 1990s by an academic. I believe it was Judy Singer, I think. And she was doing quite a lot of study and work in regards to this space, specifically for dyslexia, and coined this term because she wanted to start framing conditions like dyslexia and ADHD and OCD as something that's not a deficit, right? We all, we are all so very different, and our brains, not one person thinks the same or feels the same or learns the same. And so neurodiversity is acknowledging all of the different types of brains and people. Neurodivergent is where you do have a very specific neurological condition, which means that you process, learn, feel, and sense in a different way. And sometimes there is commonalities, and other times it's very much based on your experience, your culture, your background, your socioeconomic class as well. So those are the two terms you'll probably hear the most. And sometimes you'll hear the term neurotypical. And neurotypical just refers to the fact that you might not struggle with as many of those things, that you just have a brain that can do the normal things, right? Whatever normal means in for that person. And neurodiverse is also referencing, I believe it's also referencing all of the your neurological conditions as well, because there are lots of them, and often there are co-conditions. So if you have ADHD, the studies have shown that you're very likely to have autism spectrum disorder, or you're very likely to have dyslexia. So co-conditions can vary. I really like the new terminology that's been created in over in New Zealand. So in Maori language, and I'm not going to even try and say the words because I don't want to be disrespectful and butcher it. But the way that it's what neurodivergent means in the Maori language, or specifically ADHD, it translates to attention to many things.
Oh, you were talking about this the other day. I think that's such a good point.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? And then for autism, it's his, her, their own space and time, which is also such an important way of framing it, rather than framing it in a term of it being a deficit.
I think also what you were saying before about how, like, it's the brain that can't do things in the way that other people's brain can do things. And I feel like, I don't know if this is a good comparison or not, but I would compare it to, like, say someone that has, like, celiac disorder, like their stomach or whatever can't process gluten. It's the same thing. It's like everyone
not everyone, but a lot of people have things that one part of their body doesn't quite work the way as other people. And there's no need to discriminate. Like, no one's discriminating against people for being celiac. Yeah, so
exactly.
Why are we discriminating against people for being neurodiverse?
Yeah.
I just thought of that on the spot.
It's so good.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just about acknowledging that everybody's brain and everyone's body responds to different things. Like, not one person is going to experience a cold in the same way as the next person, or the stomach bug, or COVID, right? Yeah. And so it's acknowledging that we have differences biologically in our brains that just function differently. But also, I think, you know, culture and background also does play a lot into it too, in your response to things too. But in answer to your question about my experience at university, so
because
we're going to talk about, you know, accessing support, I was one of those students when I came to uni. So I came to uni when I was 21. I actually did really bad in my year 12 results.
Oh,
so
really?
I did terribly.
You would never know.
Yeah, you would never know. I went to university senior college as well, so I should have been technically, you know, prepped for it, but I did terribly. So I didn't even get into any of my first choices. I think I got into like my fourth choice.
What did you end up studying at university?
So I studied at university a Bachelor of Arts first. So that's what I came into when I was 21. I went to TAFE first once my blood disorder had been sort of dealt with, and I was recovering from that because it was quite a long recovery, because I had to have my spleen removed and lots of different things. But I went to TAFE first and did an advanced diploma of event management.
Wow.
Which I know, right? It gave me lots of budgeting skills, which is great. TAFE is great.
Always useful.
And the good thing about it was that it gave me some credits and I could get into university. So by 21 I knew I wanted to go and study a Bachelor of Arts because I have an intense love of history. So I did my master's here. I'm now doing my PhD at Macquarie University online. So my PhD is in the history of medicine, funnily enough, because it's really interesting for me.
Yeah.
But when I came here, when I was 21, my experience in high school had been, realistically, the support that they provided to me was okay. It was mostly just additional time on exams and additional time for assessments, which can be really helpful for some people. But for me, I didn't find it helpful.
And
right?
Also, that's not a blanket solution to everything. It's not, oh, you want help? Here's an extra 30 minutes sorted out.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody is very different. So when I came to uni, when I enrolled, I ticked the yes, I have a disability. No, I don't want support.
Mm.
And that's because I had, I think, a fundamental misunderstanding of what disability support services here actually does. Like, if I had known, and, you know, if I had taken the time myself to go and look at the website and really dig into it and, you know, speak to the lovely staff over in disability, I would have realized, oh my god, there's so much more support I could have tapped into. Like, I could have had alternative exam arrangements. I hated having my exams in the Wavell showgrounds. It's scary.
Oh my gosh, tell me about
it. You know, it's scary, it's overwhelming. And I also, you know, talks to my age, how old I am. I used to have exams there before plastic was introduced, so you're allowed to bring glass bottles in there. And that was the instance. There was an exam session that happened and someone brought one of those Voss, like, large clear bottles. Smash, like, everywhere.
And then water's everywhere.
Yeah, so it's a really overwhelming experience. And it would have been great if I could have been in an alternate exam room, which is something we provide, to get different technology. So disability support can also provide you with things like Dragon software and licensing if you need speech to text.
Yeah.
And they also work really closely with the library too, to make sure that our students are getting everything they need. So for example, if we have students who have vision, you know, impairment or challenges, we can talk with the library about getting things like Braille produced for course materials. So disability support do so much more than just, you know, access plans and extensions. And so if I had known that, I think I would have
engaged a bit more.
Done things a bit differently. But again, extensions was just not something that I personally needed. For me, it was actually more about using strategies to get my work done, to not go down research rabbit holes. And that was something that I struggled with a lot in uni, was not the sometimes getting started, even though that was really hard, was trying not to research everything, because I just fell in love with everything. Yeah.
And also wanting to get the whole picture, whereas like you probably could have done your assignment with 10% of the picture.
Yeah. And another service that I used quite a lot, as you know, at the time I just thought that I had dyslexia, was the Writing Center. So I used the Writing Center as much as I could back in the day, where you had to line up, so there was no appointments, so you had to, you know, to go into their drop-in sessions, which I think they're still holding now. And just for background, I ended up becoming a learning advisor at the Writing Center. Wow. So I started teaching Inquiring Mind here back in 2019.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I became a learning advisor in 2020. So it was from that experience the last 5 years that I started working very closely with neurodivergent students like myself, and realizing from colleagues that also worked at the Writing Center at the time, and then also working with neurodivergent students, that I definitely had more than dyslexia.
Yes.
It was I think there's something else here. And the part of the neurodivergent experience is that when you're around family members, for example, who are also neurodivergent and potentially undiagnosed neurodivergent, you tend to normalize a lot of things, you know, things that you thought, oh well, that's just normal, right? Running late all the time with my mom is always normal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, being sitting down and watching a movie and having to get up and up and up because I'm just not stimulated enough is normal, right? Or demolishing a bag of my mom's favorite chocolate bullets is, you know, normal because I'm looking for that dopamine here. And so I didn't realize that I had internalized all of those things until I started doing more and more research into how ADHD presents specifically in women.
And how full circle that you engaged with the Writing Center and became a Writing Center learning advisor, and then you didn't want to engage in disability support, but now you are working in disability support. And like, I think it's a good message for people that might feel like they don't want to engage with the service, that things are getting better, because like you didn't want to engage with it back in the day, but now you're working on the team to make it better for all of the current students.
Exactly. And doing things like the Neurodivergent Study Skill Workshops, which were created because we at Disability know that there is a huge gap right now in our medical system, and it's really hard to get a diagnosis for ADHD or ASD, and for adult assessments for dyslexia too. You know, the waiting times for ASD are incredibly long. Waiting times for ADHD for public psychiatry services are also incredibly long and very expensive. So I think some of the stuff we might talk about later, you know, debunking some of those myths, like, oh, everybody's got a little bit of ADHD or everyone's got a little bit of dyslexia, it's just so not what the reality of the situation is.
Yeah.
And so I created the workshops from my experience working with students in the Writing Center in one-on-one consultations, my own teaching experience here teaching in first year arts courses and history and classics courses, but then also knowing that we need to do something about this gap, right? And you can be self-diagnosed and come to my workshops. You don't have to have an official diagnosis. That's the purpose of them, is to help students with you know, figuring out some strategies while they either pursue a diagnosis or just figuring it out too. Or if you just want to learn more, you know, especially if you're in education or an education student, you know, it might be good to come along and just learn a little bit more. But in saying that, it is a space that I've cultivated and created with the support of the Disability Support Services staff and the staff over in Student Health and Wellbeing to build community.
Yeah.
It's also about talking with other people who've had similar experiences as you and finding some commonalities, because, you know, it's good to have someone in the room who also likes to go on research rabbit holes or also has problems with sleeping or is also really hyperactive in their brain.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which I think is the whole premise of this episode, that like everyone belongs everywhere at university. Like, just because you're not initially like pushed into the like area that you feel like you belong doesn't mean that you can't find a space that you feel like you belong at university.
Yeah, definitely. And so we do a lot at Disability Support Services, and some of that is focused specifically on neurodivergent students, but we also, our disability support advisors are fantastic. My manager, we've got our admin support staff. We all work really hard behind the scenes to make sure that, you know, students get the support that they need, whether it's through additional technology, like our alternative technology room, or what's called the ATR room. We also now have created an access room that was launched last year. So
that's the one in the library,
right? Yeah, it's in the library. So if you head to the entrance of the Barsmith Library on level 3 and you walk past the security sort of gates and you go to on the left hand side there, you'll see a whole bunch of glass doors. You can just scan the QR code and register, and then infrastructure will provide you in about 2 to 3 days with swipe card access. And the whole purpose of that room is to just calm the senses. So it's not a place to study.
Yeah.
It's a place to just, when you're feeling a sensory overwhelm, to go to that room and have some water, you know, put your headphones on, and sit in either a really dark and cool space or open the curtains, put a bit of light. We've also got lamps in there and it's pretty soundproof as well.
Well, I walked past the other day and if you didn't know it was there, you would, one, miss it, and two, even if you did know it was there, you can't see anything inside. You would have no idea like what's going on in there. And I feel like, I haven't seen it in person, but I feel like it gives a safe space from the outside. And it's very inconspicuous to go into. It's not like it's a plastered access room. So anyone that sees you walk in is not going to be like, whoa, what does that person need that for?
Exactly. So it's a really good space that we've tried to cultivate. And my team have worked really hard. And the previous manager, Nikki Kelly, who's in counselling now, she also worked really hard for that room. But we're all fantastic. We don't bite. we're there to help students. We do recognize, of course, though, in order to book an appointment, there is a level of documentation that's required. But if you call us as well and just explain the situation, we'll try our very best to help you where we can as well. And I also want to stress, because I know that some students can sometimes feel really anxious about this sort of stuff, is the confidentiality. So disability support are a completely confidential service. We do not share that information with anyone. We actually even use a separate database to the university. We don't tell your tutor everything. There's a level of confidentiality that we have to maintain, and we do maintain with our students to make sure that people's confidentiality and privacy is respected. So if your tutor or course coordinator reaches out to us to discuss the access plan, there's only so much that the disability advisors can actually say because of the confidentiality. Same for our international students. We do not provide any information to the Australian government. So please, if you do have a condition that is impairing your studies and you need some extra support, come and chat with us. We're right next to international student support too, and we work really closely with them as well, and they're a great team.
And everything is all connected, so it's like if you need support, other places can help you with your support, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to know everything about you and it's going to impact your ability to graduate or to complete your degree or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yes. And I think another good point is talking about people that might be listening to this and go, wow, that sounds nothing like me, but I want to support all of those people however I can. Is there anything that those people can do?
Yeah, so at the moment we're recruiting for the neurodiversity peer mentors for semester 2, and it would be great to see some more applications. So this is where you could be paired potentially, if we have enough mentees, with a student who is registered with our service with a neurological condition such as ADHD or dyslexia or ASD, and you can help that student as a peer. So you'd meet 4 times in the semester, and at the moment, so that's how we've sort of piloted it.
Yeah.
And it's just realistically a place to like check in with somebody who can help you navigate the university. The university is an overwhelming space sometimes, and even though everyone's working really hard to cultivate some beautiful spaces, especially in the library, like I've been down there recently and it's beautiful, it can still be really loud and overwhelming, and you do get bombarded with so much information. So those neurodiversity peer mentors are also there to help with navigating the university space, introducing you to clubs, and talking about their own experiences too, because even if that mentor isn't neurodivergent themselves, they still might have some lived experience, whether it's through siblings or parents, or they might also be working in the disability support sector.
For someone that wants to like get paired up with a mentor, how would they find that?
Yeah, so you'd have to be a registered student with disability support. Yeah. So this is why we really emphasize if you have medical documentation and you're needing support to not leave it too late, you know, come and have a chat with us. Yeah. You register online, you fill out a form. The process is really simple. You register online, one of our admin staff gets in contact with you. They then will set you up with an appointment with the disability advisors. The appointment takes roughly an hour and the disability advisor will talk about, okay, what do you need? And they go through all of the support services, including if you'd like a peer mentor. And then myself and the disability advisors work really closely to pair someone that is suitable. Yeah. As well. So it's piloting at the moment. We'll see how it goes. As I talk now, I can see my watch going off and I'm getting emails and emails, which is a really good thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good sign.
But if you're also looking for support to, you know, support the community on campus, you know, if you see the sunflower lanyards, so the sunflower symbol is the symbol for hidden disabilities. Some people might see the fire truck.
That's, yes, I've seen it so many times this week.
Right. It's great. And that is the official symbol. So that's used in airports, it's used on public transport. You can buy specific merchandise from their website as well. But the University of Adelaide sunflower lanyards are specifically for staff who want to help open up conversations with students around hidden disabilities as well, because sometimes it can be super scary, you know, go up to your tutor and be like, hey, I, you know, have ASD, or hey, I am dyslexic, because there still is quite a lot of stigma around neurological conditions and sometimes a lack of understanding, but all of that is changing. So the university and the disability support team, alongside student health and wellbeing, have been working really hard to raise awareness of neurodiversity and specifically of hidden disabilities on campus, so that we can start having those conversations around support and stigmas and stereotypes.
I think another, I'm not sure if this is a good point, but another thing that people could do to help support the community is just like what you were saying before, like you can't assume anything about anyone just by looking at them. So like, just be respectful at all times, like be kind to everyone.
Yeah.
And like follow the rules in the library, I guess. Like if it says it's quiet, study quietly, because someone might be going there because they need that quiet space. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. That's such a good point. And I think kindness and being kind and compassionate is really important. You really don't know the impact that you have on someone's day. You know, if you see someone drop something and just sort of go, oh, and like roll their eyes or say, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening, go and help them pick it up.
Yeah,
you know, that can, I've had that happen to me, where I just had a day where I was like, this is a really bad day, my PTSD was really heightened that day, my sensory challenges were really bad that day, and I remember dropping something on campus. This was a couple of years ago, and I was about to burst into tears, and someone just came up and started helping me. Oh, I think it wasn't a staff thing, it was just a student, and she was really lovely and just helped me pick up my stuff and said thank you. And it's like that small act of kindness can really change someone's day and really get you to remember, oh, there is people out there who are kind and supportive and they care, you know. It doesn't take too much effort to
honestly show that.
It's insane that there's so many people that would like see someone drop something and like potentially laugh at them or be like just like anything like that, and it's like it wouldn't hurt you like to just be a little kinder. And
and you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say something at all. Yeah. Right. You know, it's something that we learn as children, and it's really important to stick to that and educate yourself a little bit more. Neurodivergent people are all around you. People with hidden disabilities and disabilities are all around you. There's over 900 hidden disabilities listed on the index.
Oh my god.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you really don't know what that person is going through. Yeah. They might be in chronic pain. They might have just received a cancer diagnosis. They might be dealing with narcolepsy. They might be having Crohn's disease, or there's so many things. Mm. And another thing actually that I forgot to say that's really important, I think, for everyone to know, is that disability support can also help help you if you're a primary carer. So if you are a carer of someone with a medical condition and it's, you know, really impacting your studies, or again, you're just a primary carer because we have such a diverse student cohort, you are also eligible to come to our service and receive support too. So we just need some documentation as per usual, just to show who you're caring for and their medical condition. And you can also get, you know, access plan, alternative exam arrangements, and all of the things that, you know, you might need to, because that's another thing that's really important to remember when we're navigating campus, is that someone might be caring for a loved one, you know, who has a condition, and it can be a lot.
Yeah, it can be very overwhelming and very tiring for them.
Yeah.
You never know.
Exactly.
But no, circling back to the whole, like, being mindful of people, we're not trying to say, like, oh, you have to always go out of your way to help someone carry things, whatever. We're just saying, like, if you see someone that needs help and you've got that capacity, go for it. If you don't have, if you're in the negative headspace, we're not saying, like, go out of your way and help them, you know? Just be mindful.
Yeah, exactly.
And campus is for everyone.
Exactly. And don't always assume that if somebody does have, you know, a visible disability or access issue, that they always need help too, you know? Don't infantilize someone either. That's a really important point too. They can do a lot themselves. It's just sometimes everyone needs a little bit of assistance. The way that I explain it is, you know, imagine if you've broken your leg. The way you navigate campus now is completely different once you've got a physical problem. And so, the way that you navigate campus as someone who, with no access requirements, you don't think about those things, right? And then if you sprain your ankle or you break a leg, or all of a sudden you're dealing with a lot of pain and your back's, you know, you've hurt something, your experience of navigating the campus is now going to be fundamentally different.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to just try it for a couple of hours. Say, okay, I can't use stairs, can't go up them, can't go down them. How do I get to my classes?
It's impossible.
Right?
It's not, but I went on an... just like help educate myself, and because I run the Instagram account, I went on an accessible campus tour, and I was baffled at the amount, like, good luck getting from engineering south to lower Napier. For someone that can use stairs, it's probably a 30 second journey. For someone that can't, you're probably looking at like 5 minutes just to get between them.
And we work closely with infrastructure too, so if students do notice that a lift is broken, or perhaps some, you know, lines need to be made more clear, whether, you know, kind of like the yellow strip lines that you see, like, on stairs and stuff, if you notice something. Now, we don't fix those issues, you know, disability don't fix the broken lifts, but we do work closely with the people that do, so we can always forward on those, you know, feedbacks and requests to the appropriate people to try and get it resolved as quickly as we can as well. So yeah, it can be really difficult sometimes, not just navigating the university campus, but also, you know, think about going into Rundle Mall, right? If you don't have, you know, full access to everything, and sometimes dealing with the sounds of things, smells, sights, but then on top of that, having an access challenge, it makes life sometimes a bit difficult. So be kind to everyone.
Definitely. And I think I just want to circle back to the neurodivergent workshops, because I feel like that's the main thing that, like, people can educate themselves and they can get involved with.
Yeah. So the neurodivergent study skill workshops are starting again this semester. So we are trialing opening them up to 3 times a week. I know it's a lot. I'm a bit crazy like that. Last semester, they were only running on a Tuesday from 10 o'clock to 11:30. But obviously we want to try and access more students and get more students involved and give them, you know, additional time slots. I'm kind of the one person, so I'm only the one facilitator. So it can be challenging at times, but a good challenge in a way.
Yeah.
And so they happen on Tuesdays and Wednesdays starting from week 2. So there are some this week. So I just did my first session this morning, which was really good. Met
How
some
you
amazing
doing?
Yeah, tired. Met some amazing students. And we had some really good chats. And so the workshops are really, you know, tailored to neurodivergent learners. So it's my experiences that I've then put on paper. They're research based and evidence based too. So I've tried my best to find research where I can, because there isn't a lot of research in this space specifically about study skills, right? And so the workshops were created with this in mind, but also they're about reflecting on what works for you. So each activity that we do, you can sit there and do your self-reflection. And so I create a whole bunch of worksheets that you can keep kind of like your journal of all of your different needs and all of the things that work for you and things that don't work for you too, which is really important.
Yeah.
And what we also do is we make sure that there is no requirement to participate in the group. So I always have an option of like a Mentimeter or a Slido with like a QR code. So you can still put your thoughts and feelings up on the screen without having to, you know, have that whole awkward thing of putting your hand up and...
Are they going
to
pick on me?
Yeah, whatever. You know, we talk about some really deep personal stuff in some of these workshops sometimes too, and that's another reason why they're not recorded and there's no online recordings, is because we want to cultivate a space where people can feel like they can talk and be open, and you wouldn't exactly want to do that if you're being recorded too. So they happen Tuesdays and Wednesdays in person in the Union House in Rumours, or what I know as Rumours Cafe, because that's just, you know, how long I've been around, part of the furniture now. And on Fridays, we also have online sessions between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock for semester one. So they're run a little bit differently. With the face-to-face workshops, there's more interactivity. You know, you get to sit with other people who might have similar experiences to you and talk and chat if you want. Fridays, the online is more about delivering the sort of content and just talking about that. You can still ask questions. We can still have a bit of a chat, but I promise there is no Zoom breakout rooms. There's no icebreakers. None of those awkward go around the room, introduce yourself, which, you know, sometimes it's really necessary, but I'm just not that type of facilitator. So that's just a little bit about the workshops. The next couple of sessions, we're looking at things like time management, how to work with executive functioning, how to take notes when you're neurodivergent, reading comprehension, and again, all taught from a neurodivergent perspective, and it's strength-based. So when I say strength-based, I mean, okay, so if you need a million and one post-it notes to remember to do something, that's what you do.
I'm
not the source of truth on neurodivergent needs. You know, I have my own experiences and I read a lot of literature as part of my job, but I am not that source of truth. And so if something's really working for you, no matter how, you know, crazy it might seem to outsiders, that's what you're
doing. It
exactly right. You know, like I have my own very quirky, you want to call them quirky, I don't think they're quirky, things that I do for my study and to do my PhD and in the past, and it's worked for me. And so I've trialed that with some other students when we've been in one-on-one consultations and seen what's worked and what's not. And when I think of a strength-based approach to something, it's again really about working with what has worked for you before. And also just having the ability to be like, that doesn't work for me. I'm just going to leave that, because there's no point trying to keep fitting yourself into this box if that box is not working for you, and restricting yourself. You know, keep trying. And if it works for 3 months, cool. And then if it all of a sudden stops working, go to the next thing. You're not tied to that particular routine. So, yeah, we talk a lot about, you know, unconventional study sort of techniques too.
Well, thank you so much, Tiana. It's been lovely to have you on to interview you today.
Thank you. Hearing
about your experience, everything disability support can do. Do you have anything else to add?
I had a question. It was about, because you said that like people that aren't like people that are self-diagnosed can show up to the workshop. What about students that feel like there might be something different about them, but they've never really reached out? Would disability support be like a place for them to start with, or would it be something else?
I think come to the workshops.
Yeah.
If you're like, if you feel like there's something there, if you feel like, oh, I think I might fit this area, right? I think I have some ADHD from the, you know, Googling that I've done or the research that I've done. I think that might be me, or my friend who has dyslexia, or my friend that has ASD also does things that's really similar to me. Does that mean, you know, I have it too? To come to these workshops and hear from other neurodivergent students and to learn a little bit more and then make your decision there. And I can't go around and diagnose people. That's not my job. I'm not a medical health practitioner, a psychiatrist or psychologist. And, you know, that's not the role of anyone unless you're qualified to do that. But I think the first step, come to the workshops.
Yeah.
And then the next step is to, you know, if you think that's okay, something's here, to talk about the process of diagnosis with someone, specifically a health practitioner. So going to a GP, a general practitioner, and having that conversation, and then starting that very long process.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've got that medical documentation, to come into disability support for the neurological condition, and we can then help you to the best of our abilities and where we can, and create your access plan and talk about all of the additional things you may or may not need.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you keep coming to the workshops, and because we talk a lot about neurodivergent strategies and mm-hmm. how to, you know, be a neurodivergent learner.
Yeah. So yeah, such good insight. I'm just like blown away with how much you know and how much you're trying to do for the community.
So the date of, this term was coined in 1990. It's like, wow, yeah. I couldn't remember that. I know. It really shows how passionate you are about it, and that's so important.
No, thank you. So I try my best, but I'm not the only passionate one here.
For sure.
There are so many. I've come across so many amazing academics and professional staff who are neurodivergent themselves, and they're happy to talk about it, and they want to talk about it. And so there are lots of people here on campus that you can turn to. You know, you can go and have a chat, use our services. That's something that I always would say to my students when I was teaching. I used to teach, you know, Inquiring Mind, which was, you know, always a little bit controversial if someone liked it or didn't like it. And I would always say to my students, please, please, please go seek out support. You know, people do want to help, and especially your tutor, they can't help you unless you communicate what's going on, and then they can try their best to forward you to the right person. And so also look at the information, you know, spend some life admin day and go, I'm going to look at everything that counseling can do for me, and I'm going to book appointment ahead of time when you can.
Yeah.
I had a really great tip from a student this morning in my workshop, because we were talking about, you know, well, how do I work with my sleep, you know, my sleep deprived brain sometimes when I'm just sitting there in bed ruminating and going, how do I need to remember to do this. You know, when you just make a kind of to-do list in your head when you're in bed,
when
right?
When you're about to sleep,
But you know you have to sleep, and you're just like, I need to get to sleep, but I need to not forget that thing. But you don't want to go on your phone, because then you're like, well, I'm going to get exposed to all this blue light, and then I'm not going to be able to sleep.
Yeah.
She had a fantastic tip. I loved it. And she said, you know, you can put your phone on flight mode, and you can still just in bed say, you know, and I hope I'm not going to say it too here, because then all the iPhones are going to go off. You know, you just get Siri and you have them put the reminder in and set it, you know, speech to voice to text, right?
That's so smart.
So,
that's
so good. You can just say it out loud and have your phone, which everyone knows we're attached to our phones, do it. And then it reminds you, even if it's on flight mode, it's still going to go through. And so you've got that reminder there. And that was her strategy. So this is why I love the workshops so much.
We can all learn from everyone.
Exactly.
Like I just wouldn't have thought to do that.
Yeah.
I've had my phone forever and I use voice all the time, but I just wouldn't have thought to, like, I should actually just do it while I'm in bed. So I just get her off my brain.
That's so good.
And then you wake up and you're like, what was that thing?
Exactly. You won't have to worry about that, because you'll get reminded. It's written down somewhere, right?
I mean, something that I did a bit like last year during exam season, because I had so much going on, was just write it down before I sleep. But obviously when you're in bed, something might pop up and you're like, oh no, I've already spent my time writing it down. That's a really good tip.
The phones can be great and bad at the same time, you know. It's like any technology, it has it has its great things and it also has its big downfalls. So I think use what you can when you can and where you can. The trick is to remember to use it. Like, I have so many great websites and suggestions for students that I talk about, but the trick is remembering to use it.
All right, so now we're gonna do a quick rapid fire debunking myths.
I'm ready.
All right, first one: everyone has a bit of OCD, ADHD, etc.
I can hear all the neurodivergent people now just like groaning when you hear that. It is such a frustrating statement and completely not true. You know, it's a disability, and I know that some some people might not register or identify with that term, but it's a disability. It requires a very lengthy conversation and medical diagnoses and lots of different things. It's OCD is not something where, oh, I'm going to just clean and clean and clean. I'm a bit OCD. No, I have friends and colleagues who have OCD. It's, and, you know, family members. It's not like that. And same with ADHD. Like, I'm not procrastinating. I'm literally paralyzed in my brain sometimes where I'm just so overwhelmed that I can't do the task, or I can't remember anything because of my dyslexia. You know, my short-term and working memory is terrible. So I think that's always a really frustrating
stereotype. Especially with, like, TikTok off about it now.
Big time.
The second one is people with disabilities can't do anything for themselves.
Yeah, we know that that's not true.
After this conversation.
You know, everybody does need, everyone experiences their condition very differently, and conditions, you know, that, like I said, in the hidden disabilities index, so not just your disabilities, but your hidden disabilities, there's over 900. So people can do it. People with disabilities are doing a lot in their day-to-day. You just won't see it. Like, it's just a little bit, again, of a stereotype that can be really harmful in the community. You know, sometimes people with disabilities will just need additional assessment. We need adjustment. Society needs to adjust. It shouldn't be, oh, well, you know, they can't really do anything for themselves. That's, you know, again, a harmful stereotype.
All disabilities are visible.
Yeah, well, I think we've talked a lot about that anyway, right? We know that there's lots of hidden disabilities and you can't make a judgment based on someone's appearance. And that is something that does come up on social media a lot. It's conversations that I've had with colleagues too, where they're really grateful for the sunflower lanyards because it can signify to another person, like, hey, don't, you know, assume anything about me from outward appearances.
I guess the next one, we did also touch on this one before, but people with the same disability experience it in the same way.
No, so we know it's called a spectrum for a reason, you know, and when I say spectrum, I think most people think linear. They think, you know, right at the end or in the middle or here, here and here, but no, it's a colour wheel.
Yeah.
And people can experience their conditions in varying ways. You can experience things simultaneously, right? And so it's really important to keep that in mind, is that when you think of disability, and especially relating to neurological conditions like ASD, ADHD, they are a colour wheel. You can experience things and variations day to day, hour to hour.
Next one we have is, if someone looks fine, they must not be disabled, which is similar to the hidden disability.
Yeah, right. I think we've fed into this a lot too. Again, the message is always don't assume. Yeah. Don't assume if someone looks fine that they're not struggling with something. And I think that feeds into also mental health, right? Where you can't just look at someone and think, oh, they look really happy and great. You don't know what's going on, you know, in their head and the challenges that they might be facing in their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this might be the last one, but people with disabilities are inspirational just for living their lives.
Yeah, that's it again. It feels sometimes a little bit, for me personally, and everyone can have a different opinion about this, but it feels a little bit sort of infantilizing, you know, when I hear someone say, oh, well, you know, you're so inspirational. It's like, well, what choice did I have?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I'm choosing to go through this, or I've chosen to have cancer, or I've chosen to have all these complex health conditions, of which I have many. It's just, that's just not the case. And it's just, it can be frustrating a little bit in saying that, though. Like, you have to take your hat off to some people and just acknowledge, like, yeah, that's a lot. Sometimes it gets really frustrating when you hear someone, when I tell people my story, they go, I'm so sorry. What do you have to be sorry for, right? You don't need to be sorry. It didn't happen to you. But I think it's just the awkwardness.
It's like, well, what do I say now?
And that's just humans trying to feel the conversation. We're just trying to say, oh, look, I acknowledge it.
Yeah.
What I prefer when I have these conversations with people is just say that it's crappy. Just be like, look, that sounds terrible, you know, and just acknowledge that it was a terrible or crappy thing that happened, as opposed to, like, I'm sorry, because it's not anyone's, you know, fault. Yeah.
Wow, that was so good.
Yeah, incredible. I'm, like, still in shock about, like, how amazing Tiana is and everything that she's done. And
I know.
What a good interview that was.
Honestly. And, like, everything she's been through, what a strong person. And you just
you literally just never know when you see someone.
Yeah, genuinely. Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed that episode, guys. In case you want some more take note to listen to, definitely go check out last week's episode or last fortnight's episode. It was such a good one. We recorded it live in O Week. We had some of our students on as panel guests.
They were so funny and they were so relatable. Like,
I know.
But no, really worth a listen.
Yeah, you can just put it on and go about getting yourself ready and take a moment to relax and listen to Take Note.
Well, that's all we have time for. Thank you for listening in today's episode of Take Note. If you enjoyed the show, then please follow us on Spotify so that other students can find us too.
You can also head over to Instagram. I love plugging it every episode at uoa.oncampus. You can DM us with thoughts on the show and you can find the links to all of our previous episodes.
See you next fortnight.
Take note.
This is a UOA On Campus production.